Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and this is a Sunday Roundup. The Westminster Village has been hit this week with several accusations of misogyny and sexual harassment, with a furore over Jared O'Mara and his alleged comments about women, both on and offline, refusing to die down. Diane Abbott insisted to Andrew Marr that Labour would not tolerate such behaviour.
Jared O'Mara, when did the Labour Party know about what he'd said?
Well, when I heard about it, it was last Monday. He came to the PLP, he apologised. A lot of people took his apology quite seriously. But then on Tuesday, we had more information. On Wednesday, he was suspended, and the Labour Party is looking at it. There's going to be an investigation.
Because there was a text which suggests the Labour Party were told about this a month ago and didn't do anything.
I don't know anything about that. The party knew about it, as far as I know, when the allegations became public last week. And in any event, this is a matter for Ian McNicol and the party machine.
Now, clearly, we're not here in any sense to kind of sit in judgment without knowing all the facts over anybody. But nevertheless, if these kinds of things were said by any Labour MP, should they stay as a Labour MP?
I think... You're talking about the language and the tone.
Yes.
Yes, that language and that tone is not acceptable in 2017. We have now moved on, and the leader of the Labour Party is very clear that we are going to be a party with zero tolerance for sexual harassment.
Do you think Jared O'Mara can stay as Labour MP?
I can't judge because I've not seen the evidence. What I would say is that language and that tone is unacceptable. The party's moved on. And you know, where you have that sort of language and where you have that sort of harassment and sexual microaggression, it demeans and diminishes all women. That's why it's important to take a strong line.
I don't know if you heard Michael Gove on the Today programme making those comments or that joke about Harvey Weinstein. You know, it's been all over the press ever since. Do you think that's an overreaction? Did you hear it? Were you shocked when you heard it? Were you surprised?
I heard it and I didn't think it was funny. You know, particularly in Parliament, making sexual harassment a joke is one of the reasons it's not been dealt with. We've got to realise that it's undermining and demeaning for women and undermines and demeans the institution.
The Tories have their own problems, with Brexit Minister Mark Garnier caught up in his own scandal after a former aide accused him of instructing her to buy sex toys. Garnier has not denied the claim, and Jeremy Hunt told Robert Peston what action would be taken.
Abusive behaviour by MPs, by ministers. What is Theresa May going to do about all this?
Well, she's said today that she's going to write to the Speaker because it's a cross-party issue and we need to come up with an approach to solve this completely. And I think people at home will be quite angry about this because a bit like the Harvey Weinstein stuff, Parliament, like Hollywood, is very good at preaching to people what they ought to be doing and how they ought to be behaving. But I'm afraid this shows that in our own backyard, we don't live up to the high standards that we would expect others to.
And just to be clear, you think this is an issue for Parliament, not the individual parties?
Well, we are going to be, or the Cabinet Office is going to be doing a review of whether Mark Garnier has breached the ministerial code in that specific incident.
And, that was the request to his assistant to go into this sex shop and buy a couple of sex toys. That might be in breach of the code itself.
Potentially, and as the facts of that particular case are in dispute, so the Cabinet Office are going to look at it and decide whether they think there was a breach. But I think there is a broader issue, as we've seen, because it does span all parties. And, you know, my view is that, you know, if you had a daughter who got a job in Westminster, perhaps her first job leaving university, as a mum or a dad, you would want to be confident that she's not going to be subjected to this kind of pressure or this kind of behaviour. And I also think, without being too pious, but we should be aspiring to set some kind of an example as MPs. So, you know, we need to sort this out.
Aside from Mark Garnier, Hunt was also called upon to discuss the state of mental health provision across England. Andrew Marr challenged the Health Secretary over spending cuts to vital services.
June the 1st last year, there was a moment in London when if you were a young person with a mental health problem, there was not a single hospital bed available for you in London, in the capital of one of the world's great cities. That's scandalous, isn't it?
Well, we do have a problem with what we call the Tier 4 beds, and in fact we have increased the number of mental health beds in the last year as a response to those issues. But what I would say is, in all of this, the thing that is most unacceptable is if you are a young person and you need to be an NHS inpatient in a mental health organisation to have to go to the other side of the country, because what really matters in terms of your recovery is that you can be visited by your parents and your friends.
But that is happening again and again because of the lack of nurses and the lack of beds.
Well,
on your watch.
Andrew, I think you are mischaracterising what is happening, because there is more money, there are more people working in mental health, we are increasing the number of beds, particularly for young people. But Rome wasn't built in a day, and if we are going to achieve Theresa May's ambition of full parity of esteem between mental and physical health, then we are going to need to train up many, many more people to deliver that. That's what we're doing, and we're absolutely determined to end this injustice that we have at the moment in mental health. But don't forget, as we do
you've had seven years to end this injustice. Yeah. You've been in, you're entering your sixth year as health secretary, which is makes you the third longest in the post since Nye Bevan. And I can't remember who else. But nonetheless, you're one
Norman Fowler,
one of the longest-serving health secretaries. Do you not recognise that, given the cuts in nurses, given the cuts in beds over time, part of the mental health crisis has happened on your watch and is the result of the cuts that were made at the beginning of your time?
But Andrew, you are only painting a limited picture. What has actually happened on my watch is the biggest expansion of mental health provision in Europe. Other countries are looking at what we're doing. As I mentioned at the beginning
of... So it's not the beds and the nurses. Where is the expansion taking place?
Well, for example, on treatment for anxiety and depression, where what we're doing now is considered world-leading. It's even being copied by the Swedes, who are looking to import what we're doing on psychological therapies into Stockholm. Overall, we are treating, and I say this for the second time because I don't think it registered, 1,400 more people every single day.
The former business minister, Digby Jones, has earned condemnation for his apparently dreadful voting record in the House of Lords. Despite reportedly claiming £15,000 in expenses in the last parliamentary session, Lord Jones has only cast a vote seven times. He defended himself to Sarah Smith.
But just in terms of you yourself, I mean, you say you're in there inviting people in for lunch. Is it not possible for you to take part in debates and votes and ask questions at the same time?
Have you ever been and listened to a debate in the Lords?
Yes, I have, many times.
Yeah. Well, you will see how many people are in there. Other than question time, there's usually about between 8 and 14 out of the 800. And you have to put your name down in advance, and you have to be there for the whole debate.
You don't have to do that in order to vote on important pieces of legislation.
No, no, but you have to be around, don't you, when the vote is called. And you don't know when the vote is called. You have no idea when the vote's going to be called.
Yes, but this is part of what being a member of the House of Lords
means. Stuff full of people waiting there.
If you're not prepared to wait there for votes, if you're not prepared to take part in debates, why do you want to be a member? It's possible to resign from the House of Lords.
There are many, many things members of the Lords do that doesn't relate to parrot fashioning following somebody else, speaking the same thing about the same subject, which I refuse to do. About speaking to an empty chamber, or indeed hanging on, sometimes for hours, to vote. There are many, many, many other things that you do. You quote me as saying I will entertain at lunchtime or show people round the house, everything from school children to inward investors. I will meet ministers about big business issues or educational issues. And at the same time, I will meet other members of the Lords to try and get things moving. None of that relates to going into the house and getting on your hind legs. Although I do go in and sit there and learn and listen from others, which I have to say, if more people are on receive and not transmit, we might just get a better informed society. And at the same time, I many, many times will go, after I've listened, I'm leaving and there's a vote. If I haven't heard the debate, I won't vote. Because I'm not somebody who's going to hang around.
But voting is an essential part of being part of a legislative chamber. This isn't just a club or an executive committee you're on here. It's a legislature. And so passing that law is essential, is it not?
If you do you really believe that an MP or a member of the Lords who hasn't heard a moment of the debate, who is then hears the ding, ding, ding for the bell, walks in, doesn't know which lobby, the whips tell them, they haven't heard the debate, they don't even know what they're voting on, and then they go and do it. That's your democracy, is it?
And finally, after Conservative MP Chris Heaton-Harris's letter to the country's universities demanding to know what lecturers taught about Brexit, the Labour backbencher Barry Shearman has stoked the fire further. Shearman leapt to the defence of British universities so wholeheartedly that he shocked interviewer Tim Erdahl in the process.
It's interesting. There was a YouGov poll, Barry Shume, that said that 90% of academics believe that Brexit would have a negative impact. You might not be surprised by the result, but I mean, there is clearly an anti-Brexit feeling on campus, isn't there?
I think the truth is that when you look at who voted to remain, most of them were the better educated people in our country. The people.
Oh, what? Well, now, that is controversial. Massively controversial.
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely true. You could actually see the pattern. All the university towns, all the university towns voted
that,
remain.
Do you stand by that? You're seriously saying that better educated people voted for Remain?
They did.
People voted to leave.
Absolutely, they did. I didn't use the other expression.
That's the connotation.
Okay. Yeah. Am I allowed to answer? You're asking me the question. I'm trying to answer you. The fact of the matter is that we know that the what I call the balmy army from the Brexit camp run the Conservative Party now. They really are. The lunatic fringe have taken over his party. And I watch them and I see them and it is amazing. And this character, who I've never heard speak in the House of Commons, who, you know, doing a McCarthyite sort of tactic of trying to frighten the campuses,
that's not what
frighten
he was doing
university
at all.
Students. I mean, this man who went to Wolverhampton Polytechnic, I mean, who does he think he is? You know, trying to frighten my University of Huddersfield.
Can I just...
because they have high class intellectuals teaching kids, and most people with a good education know that Brexit will damage the lives.
We haven't
of
time to go to the whole Brexit.
That's all for this week. I'm Katie Balls, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with the first 12 issues for just £12, plus a limited edition Spectator Moleskin notebook. Just visit spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.